Welcome to the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, an SB Nation blog covering your Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm your host, PD, joined this week by Dale Bloom. Dale, how was your Father's Day?
Oh, Father's Day was fantastic. Well, we did some kayaking, hung around the house. The weather was beautiful here. You know, I'm sure you can relate, but we got a little bit of a break from the 100-degree weather we've been having over the last week and a half. So we're back at it this week, but just had a fantastic weekend.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. The Jackets continue to make some minor news with the, not the signings that we want, but signings that they need to take care of nonetheless. One of the restricted free agents that was re-signed over the weekend was Liam Foudy. He signed a 2-year contract. It is a two-way contract this coming season and then a one-way contract in 2023-24, and he will be a restricted free agent at the end of it. Carries a cap hit of just over $700,000. His AHL salary this year would be $200,000. It's weird. Foudy is a guy that just 2 years ago at this time, we were really, really excited about him signing his pro contract, and he played well at times in the bubble, but then the last 2 years have just kind of been nothing from him. There's just been bad timing. There's been the COVID stuff. There's been injuries. What do you think of the future for Liam Foudy at this point?
You know, I think that the jury is still out. You know, he's getting older. He's been around for a while. He's had his opportunities. It's really unfortunate that he went through the injury struggles that he did this past season, because he likely would have had a good shot, especially down the stretch towards the end of the season. He didn't have time to settle into new system, new coach, you know, any of that. So, you know, I think that the deck is definitely getting to the point where it's getting stacked against him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to have an opportunity in Cleveland to prove himself, but listen, the guy still possesses a lot of skills. He's crazy fast. You know, you could probably put him up against Robinson. He might even be faster than Robinson. He might be sure. The fastest guy in the organization. And he's still going to have an opportunity to kind of put that game together. You know, he's probably not, if he does end up sticking in the NHL, he's not going to be a top six guy, most likely. But there's still a chance that he becomes a bottom six guy. You know, he's got the skills. It's a question of can he put it together?
Yeah, it's interesting. When he was drafted, because the pipeline was so thin at that point, you know, we were wondering, oh, hey, can he be a, you know, a top six center? You know, can he be maybe the guy behind Pierre-Luc Dubois? But yeah, I agree with you that now at this point, you know, enough other guys have been added that have a higher ceiling than him. But if he can at least establish himself as a regular NHL player, then that's a win for a guy drafted in the back half of the first round. Like that's good enough at that point in the draft, with as, you know, unpredictable as the draft can be starting at that point. Now, you know, the thing on him has always been that he's a tremendous athlete, but there is question as to whether his hockey skills or his hockey IQ would be able to catch up with that. And this is where a guy like that needed so much work in development. And so, you know, losing half a season or so because of, you know, COVID, you know, just not having anything in the fall of 2020, that hurt him. And then again, the injuries, you know, cutting into his playing time. It's just really unfortunate. I feel like this is a guy that could end up being a casualty of the COVID schedule. And he won't be the only one across the league. There are a lot of guys that will have had their development interrupted because of that. But yeah, I do think that if he can stay healthy, that he could get a spot in the bottom six. You mentioned Robinson. I mean, he could very well replace Robinson in a year. It's interesting to me that they made the second year of the contract a one-way deal. That seems to suggest to me that they view him as being an NHLer a year from now. Mm-hmm. So do you think he'll hit that?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. He's still only 22. Yeah. You know, it feels like he's been around for longer than that, but he's still only 22. I know that he's a rarity and it's a guy we're going to talk about later, but look at a guy like Michael Bunting. You know, the speed and the skill are there. He's 26 years old and has had his first full season in the NHL, you know, and may end up winning the Calder Trophy. You know, so it's not out of the question that Foodie's game comes around and he ends up in the NHL, whether it's in Columbus or somewhere else. You know, so we'll take a look and see what happens. He's a February birthday. So, you know, he turns 23 next season. He's still got time. I know that he's probably not feeling the same way, but I'm sure that's what the organization is telling him, right? Hey, you've got time. You continue to work hard and continue to grow your game.
Yeah. So let's just hope that he stays healthy and can maybe take some steps forward this season. Another bottom six type that re-signed, and this one took me a little bit by surprise, but Brandon Gaunce signed a 2-year deal. Now this one is a 2-way deal for both seasons on the contract. So very cheap deal. I take it to mean that, you know, they envision him to be a Cleveland guy for the foreseeable future. Were you surprised by this deal? Like I was
at first I was, but the 2-way is the key right there. Just like you said, if you look at Cleveland's roster, especially last season, they were hurting down the middle even more than the Blue Jackets were. They need guys up the middle. They need veteran guys. And he kind of fit into the organization. He's comfortable. They know him. I know he was playing up in Columbus towards the end of the season last year or this season, but it took a lot of injuries for him to get there. You know, he really struggled at times in the NHL. He was able to score some goals, put up some points, but there were some times where he just looked completely lost out there, defensively especially. But he'll be an added bonus for Cleveland. You know, he might see some NHL games here and there. But I honestly think that this is more of a Cleveland signing than anything else.
Yeah, I see him as a, you know, 13th or 14th forward as best. But that's fine. You need a guy to play that role. And sometimes, you know, a veteran guy on a small contract like this, like a guy that can be called up to be a spare forward on a road trip and you can have him in the press box, but it's not going to hurt his development or anything to sit for a while. That's fine. But yeah, he was one of the top scorers for the Monsters last year. So, you know, he has value in the AHL. I think the Monsters could use talent. They could use guys that can score. So, you know, I feel bad that the Monsters have not been a more successful team on the ice. You know, I know that wins and losses aren't the big thing in the AHL, but I still would like to see the Monsters win more games because I think the players on the team can learn from that. So if a guy like Gaunce can spend more of the year in Cleveland and produce like he did last year, I think that can benefit the players around him who are guys that have more of an NHL future and upside long-term, perhaps. The final signing I want to talk about is Daniil Tarasov, the goalie. He signed a 3-year deal. All 3 years are one-way contracts, but the salary goes up each year. I was a little surprised that it was a one-way every year. I also thought the 3 years were maybe a little bit longer than I expected. I thought he'd maybe be going on a 1 or 2 year contract for a while here. What's interesting to me is that when this contract expires, he'll still be an RFA, and Elvis Merzlikins will have 2 years left on his deal. So it makes me think that at that point, the Jackets could have a decision to make whether Elvis is still their guy or whether Tarasov is ready to take over at that point, and maybe Elvis gets traded. What do you think?
I absolutely think that they see Tarasov as the future of the organization. You know, whether it is 3 or 4 years from now, whether it's 5 years from now, I really think that that's probably what they see. He's got the skill. I mean, we saw it when he played the few games he played this season. He's big. He's got the skill. He's exactly, you know, what you see in other goalies in the NHL that are having a lot of success. You know, the big question mark for him is if he can stay healthy. Injuries have been an issue for him in his short career. And as far as Elvis goes, I mean, it's going to be great for Elvis. I think when it gets to the point here, probably after this next season, Tarasov will probably be the number one in Cleveland. But Tarasov's going to push Elvis. There's going to be a lot of competition there. They're going to push each other. And it's good for an organization to have that. There's several organizations across the NHL that are dying for goalie help. Mm-hmm. Look at Edmonton being one of them. And, you know, to have a guy like Elvis, to have a guy, you know, waiting in the wings like Tarasov, it's a luxury. And I'm sure that the organization is overjoyed. I don't know if you saw on Twitter, PD, someone on the Blue Jackets media team retweeted it. But one of the national talking heads had said that in a few years, people are going to be asking the question of who has the cheapest contract in the NHL is basically just a total steal. And they had said that it's going to be Tarasov. So it's definitely something to keep a lookout for.
Yeah. I mean, his cap will be just over $1 million. And, you know, I see him being, you know, at least the backup in 2023-24 and 24-25. And, you know, it's very possible that in that last year of his contract, you know, that he will be perhaps a 1B to Elvis's 1A. You know, they could be just a full-on goalie tandem by that year. You know, if Tarasov develops like we hope that he can and like the team hopes he can. And as I said, you know, and Elvis is a guy I think that likes competition, and so I think that can push him as well. And that's a great situation to be in. That's a great problem to have, you know, having two goalies pushing each other. And then, you know, one of them becomes an asset then that could be moved if necessary. And, you know, and depending where the team is at too, because hopefully, you know, I think we all want the team in 3 years to be rising to that contender level. All right. So, speaking of contenders, the Stanley Cup final is in full swing. The Colorado Avalanche have jumped out to a 2-0 lead in the series, featuring a 7-0 thrashing on Saturday night. Wow, I did not see that coming. Now, I'm not, you know, I picked Tampa coming into this series. I think they've shown that they're not a team that you can count out. But, ooh, do you think maybe we can count out Tampa at this point?
Winning 4 out of 5 against the Avalanche is a tall order.
Ooh, yeah, which, you know, you would have said the same thing going up against Igor Shesterkin last round, but man, these Avalanche are a lot better than that Rangers team was. And that's no disrespect to the Rangers.
I will say that it wouldn't shock me if the Lightning took both of these games in Tampa. You know, I picked the Avalanche in 7 going into this series. You know, it might end up being a little bit shorter than that. And what's interesting to me is I think one of the criticisms, not necessarily criticism, but one of the worries, I think, for the Avalanche going into this playoffs was goaltending. Were mm-hmm. they going to have good enough goaltending to be able to win the cup?
Right.
And, you know, they don't have – they've got solid guys back there, you know, but they don't have a Shesterkin or a Vasilevsky or a Bobrovsky or any of those guys back there. And they've just been able to completely shut down teams. And not even they've been able to play well in front of their goalies, right? And not have to lean on a goalie to win games. But just the absolute clobbering that they've given to the Tampa Bay Lightning has been something to behold.
Well, yeah, I was looking up some of the advanced stats, and it was like at 5-on-5 in Game 2, they allowed like 0.2 expected goals against or something like that. So they didn't even need their goalies to be great because the defense just wasn't allowing Tampa to do anything. And even offensively, Colorado just had the puck so much that Tampa barely touched the puck to be able to do anything, which, I mean, that's the way that you support your goalies. And that's the way that you can, as, you know, Colorado, their offseason strategy, you know, they were willing to let Grubauer hit free agency and they were willing to let him sign elsewhere. And I think knew that everything else on the team was good enough that they didn't need a great goalie. They just needed good goalies, and that would be enough. And you saw in a game like that, that all the skaters did enough that they didn't need great goaltending in that game and were able to get a shutout anyway against a really good Tampa offense, a Tampa that has Braden Point back and everything, which I thought that was going to be an X factor in the series. But so far, wow, it has not been.
One of the things I would be interested to see is, you know, what would this series look like if both teams had come into the series kind of in the same point as far as rest and games played and so forth, because the Avalanche has, you know, they haven't played nearly as many games as Tampa. They had nearly a week off before game one. You know, Tampa Bay has been beat up pretty bad. And I can't remember what the exact stat is, but it's something to the extent of the team that has played the least number of games in the first two rounds, you know, goes on to win the cup, win that series the majority of the time. You know, I do think that the Avalanche are probably a better overall team than the Lightning anyway. And they're showing that for sure. But we'll see how Tampa Bay responds in these next two games. Cause man, they certainly have the ability. I mean, look what they did against New York. They have the ability to turn around, and at least make the series competitive.
Yeah, for sure. And no, I don't think that the rest thing, that it's not super convincing to me, because, you know, Colorado had, you know, question marks about Darcy Kemper's health because they're missing Nazem Kadri and Burakovsky, and the fact that they're able to still do so well without Kadri, to think that, like, oh, if somehow, you know, maybe they were at full, if both teams were at full strength, then they would have that extra bonus there. So, I think it certainly the rest factor, it matters, but I think it just goes to speak with, you know, Colorado being so much better than everyone in their conference that they were able to win so quickly in those series. You know, I think they deserve this reward of being the fresher team coming into this. But, you know, I thought rust was going to be a factor game one, and I think it maybe speaks to them blowing that lead that they had. But you look at the underlying numbers, and that was still a dominant game themselves. That was the case of Tampa just capitalizing on the few chances that they got in that one. So that was absolute domination. I am curious to see what happens on home ice in Tampa, you know, that can certainly swing things a little bit. I certainly don't think this is going to be sweep by any means. I think Tampa's going to win a few games here at least, but I just think Colorado is playing such good hockey here that they'll be able to sustain enough to win two out of the next five games at least.
Jack Johnson is only two games from being a Stanley Cup champion.
Whew, you know, I saw a tweet on Saturday night that says something to the effect of, it shows how good Colorado is that they have Jack Johnson playing meaningful minutes and it's not earning. But and he hasn't been bad. You know, sometimes they've had like really good on ice numbers with him. And I mean, I honestly, you know what? We joke about Jack Johnson a lot, and a lot of it has been deserved, but I'm happy for the guy. You know, he's been around the league a long time. He has not been on teams that have had a lot of playoff success. You know, he just missed out winning a ring with LA. So for him to win it now, that'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool.
I will say, too, it does say a lot about the coaching staff, Jared Bednar and his staff, because they've been able to take their team and Jack Johnson being a part of that and play to everybody's strengths. And they've done just a great job of that. You know, this team was such a disappointment over the last couple seasons, you know, hitting the playoffs. People thought that they would roll through and you know, be competing for the cup. And it hasn't happened, but, you know, they've made adjustments. They stuck with Bednar, and he's done a phenomenal job with them. And I will be happy to see, you know, especially Bednar, if they can manage to pull it off. You know, the one person that I will feel kind of bad for is Riley Nash. Because, you know, that would have been pretty cool to, you know, it'd be kind of cool to see him win a cup too.
Bednar's a great coach, certainly, but I also give a lot of, maybe even more credit to Joe Sakic as GM and the moves that he made to rebuild this team and the talent that he's assembled there. I mean, I remember thinking after the whole Matt Duchene situation that he had really blown it and that he didn't make the right moves there. But, you know, I was wrong. You know, he got a good return. You know, drafted Cale Makar, who is arguably one of the best players in the entire league at this point. I mean, he's a really, really special player. And then the way that he has, you know, shuffled guys in and out of the bottom of the lineup. And, you know, I think at the deadline, he made savvy moves, bringing in Josh Manson, bringing in Arturi Lehkonen, in just guys that fit those certain roles on the team, you know, and, you know, didn't panic after the early playoff defeats the last few years, you know, just stuck with what they had. Like, this is our core. This is our coaching staff. We believe in what we're doing and we think it's going to work out. And I think the patience is finally being rewarded here.
Yeah, what's interesting to me too is that Colorado is another one of those teams that just has done so well in the draft.
Yeah.
And you can chalk it up to luck. You can chalk it up to whatever. But look at another team right on the other side of the ice there, which is the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is another team that's found a lot of hidden gems outside of the first round.
Yeah.
You know, they've got guys that are, you know, Braden Point, you know, Victor Hedman,
Yeah.
and, you know, Steve Yzerman, you got to give him a lot of credit. And then you got another former player, Joe Sakic, that's done the same thing with the Avalanche. So it gets to a point too where you start wondering, some of these guys, they just might be better drafters than other GMs. And it might be a little bit more than just a stroke of luck.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. All right, with the time we have left, we have to talk about some NHL awards on Tuesday night. The NHL will be giving out the remainder of their end of season awards. These are the big ones. So let us start with the Vezina Trophy, because this one I think is an obvious one. Igor Shesterkin, UC Saros, Jacob Markstrom. Like, there's no way this isn't Shesterkin, right?
There's no way.
I mean, is there any way that it isn't unanimous in terms of first place votes for him?
I
I
mean,
think it's got to be Runaway, right?
You would think so. You know, you see some crazy votes sometimes, and you know, fortunately, this isn't college football or college basketball. You know, as far as the ranking systems go, but yeah, there's just no question.
And then the Norris Trophy for best defenseman, Victor Hedman, Roman Josi, Cale Makar. Now, you know, the voting takes place after the regular season, so Makar's amazing playoff run is not included, but you know, and now Josi had 100 points in the regular season. I think a lot of people I've seen have said they think that Josi can win this, but should it be Josi or should it be Makar?
I think it's got to be Josi. That he would get my vote. You know, Makar is phenomenal. Do not get me wrong. You know, he's one of the best defensemen in the league right now. He's on the better team. Josi put up better numbers on the worst team. You know, arguably the worst team that made the playoffs, the Nashville Predators. And he's a phenomenal defenseman, and I think that he earned it this season with the kind of numbers that he put up.
I like Josi a lot. I do think, though, that I would give this to Makar because he is a better all-around defenseman. And it's not a knock on Josi's defensive game or anything, but Makar is just so good on both ends of the ice. Now, I'm sure there's some voters who feel like, oh, well, he'll get it in the future. But, you know, no, they gave it to Adam Fox last year as a young guy. I think Makar's time is now. I think it should be him. Now, this is a case where I would have made the case for giving the Norris to Makar, but giving Josi some love for the Hart Trophy because Josi was more valuable to his team. Like you said, you know, he was Josi's play and Saros's play were what dragged the Predators into the playoffs. So I think it makes him valuable, but it doesn't necessarily make him the absolute best defenseman. And then we have the Calder Trophy. Now, there's a lot of interesting things to discuss here. So we have Michael Bunting of the Maple Leafs, Mo Sider of the Detroit Red Wings, and Trevor Zegras of the Ducks. Yeah, I feel like Sider is a guy that has been talked about as the favorite since like October or November because he had a great start to the season. And I think it's just sort of been accepted that it's his trophy to lose. But other guys, I think, did better as the season went on. Now, with Michael Bunting, should a 26-year-old win the Calder Trophy?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
You know, I could definitely see the argument there. You know, I think he played less than 40 games, you know, before coming into this season, you know, which obviously there's that threshold. I don't know what the exact number is, but there's that threshold to be considered a rookie. As difficult as it is to break into this league, and it gets harder and harder as guys get older. I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he did. Now, given there's the argument of look at the team, look at the line he played on, played with Austin Matthews. You know, I think that there's some guys on the Blue Jackets that probably could have put up some nasty numbers
Yeah.
playing next to Austin Matthews. You know, but you look at at that. I think that definitely has to play into it. Zegras, great player, had a great year. He's a really interesting guy to me. I don't know. This one could be close. You know, the NHL loves their grizzled veterans, guys that have been around. You know, so I kind of wonder if that kind of mentality in the NHL might swing it towards Michael Bunting's way a little bit.
Yeah, and of course it'll be interesting. It has been so long since there has been a Maple Leaf that has won a major award, which is kind of surprising. So for all the talk about the media's Toronto bias, like, it doesn't actually come into play with those awards. I don't know if I would make an age limit for the Calder, but I maybe would include some limit based on professional years. So like last year when Kaprizov won it, but here he had been a pro in the KHL for so long. So I'd maybe take that into account as well. I think I would like to see it more honoring the guys that are coming in as truly young players with less professional experience. You know, even a guy like Zegras having played like 20 some games last season, you know, I feel like, yeah, that makes what he did this year maybe like a little bit less impressive as far as making him a rookie of the year. You know, I'm more impressed by the guys that come in as true rookies and put up numbers. Now, that being said, of these three, my vote would be for Zegras, just because he is the most electric of them. He is a really fun player to watch. He's a guy that I think should be a model as the future of the NHL. Like, guys that can do really interesting things with the puck and score in interesting ways. I think that's something that should be rewarded going forward. So give me more Trevor Zegras type players going forward. That would be my vote there.
We know that Torts wouldn't vote for Zegras though. So,
and you know what? I think all of that's actually a little bit overblown. I think if Zegras actually was on Torts' team, that Torts would be out there defending him. And I think maybe he would have a conversation with him behind the scenes, just to maybe warning him about, oh, hey, if you do stuff like this, there's going to be guys like Jay Beagle that are going to have a problem with it. I think he'd maybe warn him about that aspect of it. But I think he would be happy to have a guy that could score like that, or basically a guy that would just score, period. You know, as long as he was putting in the work in practice, as long as he was doing the right stuff away from the puck, then he'd be A-okay in Torts' book. You know, Torts is fine with offensive guys, as long as they do their job, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I agree.
But, and I also think that was maybe a case where ESPN wanted him to have a hot take there. So
it worked, didn't it?
We're still talking about it, right? And then finally, there's the Hart Trophy for the most valuable player in the league: Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, or Igor Shesterkin. Who is the MVP?
There's a lot of people that disagree with me on this, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, PD. You know, the definition of the Hart Trophy is who was the most valuable to their team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're going to go by that kind of definition, in my opinion, it's got to be Shesterkin.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the underlying numbers, especially the first half of the year. Shesterkin was the reason that the Rangers were winning games. If it had been, you know, a different goalie back there, a goalie that wasn't quite as good, you know, the Rangers probably weren't winning the games that they were winning. They probably didn't have the points that they had. You know, so, you know, that's my personal opinion. I don't think he's going to win it. You know, it's probably, do you go with the guy who has 60 goals, or do you got to go with the guy that put up 123 points? I think that's kind of be what it comes down to. I think it's a toss up.
Yeah. So, you know, I think you make a good point about Shesterkin, although by that rationale, I think then you'd have to give the Hart to a goalie every year, because a great goalie is always the most valuable to his team. So I think you'd maybe need some goalie with a truly transcendent season. And I don't know that this was quite that for Shesterkin. My vote would go to Matthews, because I think he's had a great career to this point, and then this year was him taking it to a whole other level. And I just think it was a really impressive season to watch, and he could really carry his team at times. Even with all the other talent on there, it was still often the Matthews show. Now, there's also the 10 Lindsay Award for Outstanding Player, and this one's voted on by the players. And that has Matthews and McDavid, but also Roman Josi. Now, and again, there, I think for most outstanding, I think it would still be Matthews over those guys. Would you agree or disagree there?
I would probably agree. You know, I agree with everything you said. He had such an outstanding year. He had a year where he stepped up, took his game to the next level. 60 goals is a big mark. And I think the players are probably going to appreciate that. Mm-hmm. For sure. At what point does Connor McDavid, being Connor McDavid year in and year out, just kind of take the dull off of that edge a little bit, if you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
You know, he's going to score 120 points every single season. At what
do we take it for granted, right? That he's Connor McDavid, and that's what he's going to do, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it is, and I would be interesting to hear an honest assessment from the players as to which of those guys they really think is the better, not just this season, but just overall. Like, which guy would you least want to face in the game? You know, is it, you know, and I think McDavid probably has more skill overall, but I think that Matthews has become a better all-around player. But is that something that the players recognize as well? Or are they more just afraid of what McDavid can do offensively? You know, that would be an interesting question to get out there.
I think that's a great question, you know, and it kind of boils down to, we talked about this earlier in the season, is who's the best player in the NHL right now. And if you gave me a choice for one of those guys, just a binary choice of one of those guys to be on the Blue Jackets, I'd pick Matthews.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, that'd be my pick.
Yeah. Now, that being said, wouldn't turn my nose up at no. McDavid. And to his credit, in these playoffs, man, he stepped up to another level in the postseason. You know, people have said, oh, he needs to do more in the playoffs, Man, he did all he could to drag that team to where they were. And even when they got swept by the Avalanche, he was keeping his team in those games. You know, it took everything to beat him. So I just think we're really lucky to live in a time where we can watch both of these guys play.
Here's a question for you. If Toronto wins that game 7, ooh, are they sitting where the Lightning's sitting right now?
I don't think so. I don't know, because I feel like, you know, because they lost to Tampa, that they would have found a way to lose to Florida or to New York. But then again, if they manage to beat Tampa, maybe they have the magic number to beat Florida or New York. I don't know. I feel like either of those teams would have matched up against Toronto better than they did against Tampa.
I think that's fair.
But it's a really good question. It's a really good question. All right. So that's all we have for this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
For more content from The Cannon, go to jacketscannon.com. You can also follow The Cannon on Facebook and on Twitter at CBJCannon. If you like this podcast, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to subscribe on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Purley and the Howlin' Moons. Go to angelapurley.com for more music and show dates.